We're going to move on to item 11.
Okay. This is a request by Paul and Michelle Halder. It's after the fact request to retain a concrete boat ramp and a 77-foot by 55-foot pier with an 820-square-foot boathouse adjacent to property situated along the Port Walthall Channel of the Appomattox River in Chesterfield County. This project requires both a wetlands permit and a subaqueous permit. So the Halder property is located on the Appomattox River in this top channel here, the Port Walthall Channel. This is approximately about a mile northwest of the I-295 bridge crossing over the Appomattox River. This is an aerial shot of that river, and you can see there are several residential structures, some piers, a couple boathouses, and boat ramps. This is the actual pier structure that the Halders currently own. The shoreline conditions consist of a timber bulkhead with a fringing vegetation of the upper reaches of the intertidal mudflat. Channelward off of the bulkhead is a 77-foot wide by 55-foot long pier that has approximately 3,700 square feet of decking. Of that decking, approximately 2,500 of that is over state bottom, and the remaining 1,250 is over tidal wetlands. This decking also includes approximately 550 square foot floating dock that's located between the larger pier and the boat ramp. And you can see at the downriver end of the pier, there's a boathouse, and this small area here is actually an upper deck off of the gable roof. So this came to staff's attention in June of 2012 when the upriver neighbor to Mr. Halder requested an oversized pier. After staff found the pier on Mr. Halder's property, they sent correspondence to Mr. Halder that was dated September 7th of 2012, just requesting coordination on a possible violation. Mr. Halder responded very promptly, and the first site visit was on September 17th of 2012. So this is a ground shot that was taken at that first site visit. And at that initial site visit, staff discussed with Mr. Halder the fact that the pier exceeded the 400-square-foot statutorily authorized pier size, that staff was unable to find any JPAs or permits on file for that parcel for an oversized pier, and that as it stood, the pier was a violation. Mr. Halder explained that he purchased the property in 2009 and that all the structures had already been built when he purchased the property, and he didn't realize that the proper permits were not secured prior to constructing these structures. At the meeting, we discussed the options to remove all of the decking in excess of 400 square feet and completely eliminate the violation, or to submit an after-the-fact request to retain the pier. And I would just like to make a note, this will come in a little bit, the size limit for a private pier, the exemption was set in 2003 at 250 square feet. After that, it was increased to 400 square feet in 2006. So there was a size limit that did go into effect in 2003. This is another photograph that was taken at the site visit. You can see the boathouse here and that small upper decking. This is looking upriver at the along the pier. And then this is the boat ramp, and actually at the initial site visit, staff was unaware that this was also constructed without a permit, so it was not discussed at the original site visit, but during the review process it came up, and so that's included in the after-the-fact request. This is just some photographs that were taken at a follow-up site visit on November 29th. So this is the plan view drawing that was submitted by Mr. Halder in his after-the-fact joint permit application, and through discussions with staff, he ultimately came up with an area of 500 square feet that he would voluntarily remove. And while we certainly appreciate Mr. Halder's cooperation, that does not necessarily, it doesn't really address the excessive encroachment over state bottom. So going back, just to kind of go through the history of this project site, nobody has an exact date when the structures were installed. This top panel here is a photograph taken from Google Earth, actually. It's March of 1994. And you can see that the boat ramp, the boathouse, and it's hard to see, but there is a pier that were present at least since 1994. And the previous owner of this parcel, his name is Mr. Barney McLaughlin, he owned it from 1980 to 1993. And during the current review process, he did acknowledge that when he owned this parcel, he installed the modest pier, the boathouse, and the boat ramp. He thought he had secured permits for it, but we were unable to find anything under his name. So we're moving forward as though it doesn't have a permit. This bottom panel here is taken in December of 2002. Again, this is from Google Earth. Pretty clearly, you can see the boat ramp, the modest pier, and the boathouse. And then this is 2003, and just wanted to point it out, this is when the size limitation went into effect, and there is no pier here then. This tree, I think, is obscuring the small pier that was there. And then in 2004, you can see that the pier is present along the shoreline. So it was built sometime between May of 2003 and June of 2004. Again, there are no records of permits for these structures. Because of the wetland impacts associated with the boat ramps and the fact that Chesterfield County has not yet adopted the wetlands ordinance, staff held a wetlands hearing on November 14th for this after-the-fact request for the boat ramp. It is approximately 250 square feet of impact over tidal wetlands. Mr. Halder was present at the public hearing, and no one else attended, and no issues were brought up. The adjacent property owner upriver from Mr. Halder, Mr. Robert Schrum, submitted a letter during the public interest review in support of Mr. Halder retaining his pier, and he acknowledged the generosity of Mr. Halder and the previous owner on hosting events and being generous with the use of their pier. In coordination with Chesterfield County, the county did indicate that the pier, from their standpoint, is an illegal structure because there are no primary structures on the upland property, but it's my understanding that the county is not going to take any action at this time. So Mr. Halder, again, bought this property in 2009. All these structures existed, and he wishes to retain everything. Staff supports the after-the-fact request to retain the boat ramp and the boathouse because those were both built over 20 years ago. Staff cannot, however, support the request to retain the entire pier given the significant degree of encroachment. Again, the Sebaquius guidelines charge the commission with considering water dependency and necessity. Staff understands Mr. Halder's request, but approximately 2,500 square feet of decking will remain over state bottom. That exceeds the statutory authorization and is extremely large for typical water-dependent uses. And staff does not feel this has been adequately justified. Staff is certainly sympathetic to Mr. Halder because he was not directly involved with the construction of the pier, but had a JPA been submitted prior to the construction of these structures, staff would not have supported such a large encroachment. To sort of discuss what staff supports retaining, the dark green here is all considered in tidal wetlands. The boat ramp, again, we held the hearing, and staff supports that encroachment. As far as the decking goes, that is an open pile structure in tidal wetlands, which is exempt from a permit. So staff feels that's acceptable to retain. And then staff also feels that the decking in the original footprint of the pier, plus that channelward section, and all the landward decking beyond the boathouse is acceptable to retain as well. Staff does recommend, however, removing this small area here in pink, and that's approximately 1,000 square feet. Staff's current proposal like this would leave approximately 1,500 square feet over state bottom for Mr. Halder to use. That's about three times the statutory authorized area. After evaluating the merits of the project and considering all the factors contained in 28.2-1205A of the Code of Virginia, staff recommends approval of the boat ramp, floating dock, and boathouse, but is compelled to recommend denial of a portion of the pier decking. Accordingly, we recommend that Mr. Halder be directed to remove the decking channelward of mean low water on the upriver section of the pier between the boat ramp and the footprint of the original pier. Following removal of the excess decking, a permit would be issued for the boathouse, boat ramp, and the remaining pier. Should the commission decide to approve any portion of the after-the-fact request, staff recommends a civil charge in the amount of $3,000 for a minor degree of deviation or noncompliance and a moderate degree of impact. Since the existing structures currently constitute a violation of Chapter 12, Article 1 of the Code of Virginia, staff also recommends the commission require any after-the-fact permit be executed and any required restoration be completed within 90 days. Failure to complete the actions within 60 days would necessitate this matter being brought back to the commission for further enforcement measures. And the applicant is here, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Julia?
How did you all determine removal of that approximate 1,000 square foot in that area, why that area as opposed to any of the other green shading?
Sure. Well, we felt that the floating dock was appropriate because that allows him access to the boat ramp for like a tending pier. The area landward of the boat ramp where the boat house would be helpful when he comes in, not with the boat. He has one that he wants to use. And the original footprint of the pier, since that has existed since 1994, and that really kind of left just this area here. In addition, somebody on the water may feel comfortable zipping in here to do something versus coming around in here where they actually have to come around a private boathouse to get in. So
thank you.
That was sort of where that came from.
Yes, sir. Did I understand that this gentleman bought this property and all of that was there?
Yes, he did.
And we're going to charge him a fee for it being there?
Well, if the commission approves any portion if the commission approves any portion of the after the fact request, and that's up to you guys if you want to accept that recommendation.
Mr. Sesson.
But the staff feels we should remove part of it?
Yes, given the encroachment over state bottom.
Any further questions, Mr. Beck?
No, I'm just confused at all that. I think that a man bought the property, and it's there, and why are we penalizing him? I don't know.
Mr. Washington, you?
I think what we have here is we have an excessive encroachment over state submerged lands as a result of the illegal construction of this pier. And just because property transfers from one person to another doesn't resolve the violation. So we have to deal with the violation, and we have to look at what is acceptable, even though a new person now, as opposed to the person responsible for building it. And that's where we're coming from on this.
Any questions, Mr. Beck?
No.
Okay. Mr. Sesson.
Based on your research, you feel that the structures were built while the existing rules were in place, based on the Google map and the time frame and all of that?
Yeah, because nobody really knows when they were built. Mr. Helder was unable to get a hold of the person who owned the property immediately before he did. I think his name is Mr. Chris Andriano. Mm-hmm. I believe he lives out of the country. So we can't pinpoint exactly when it was constructed, but using the Google Earth imagery, that's about as close as we can get.
And the existing rules were in place at that point in time?
Yes, they went into effect in 2003.
Thank you.
One more question.
Yes, sir.
Do you think that the owner knew that this pier was in violation when he purchased it?
I don't know.
Is he present?
The applicant is present, correct. Well, let's ask him.
Could we ask that person?
Yes, sir. The applicant, may you come forward, please. Thank you, Juliet.
Swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
Thank you.
My name is Paul Halder. I'm the owner of the property and that violation. I surveyed the property in 2004. I'm a land surveyor by trade. I surveyed the property in 2004, witnessed the dock of being a proportional size that I'd never seen on a private residence before, but also with the survey I did, there was a wharf that had been in that place since like 1890 in this exact location. There's still old poles under it, and when I surveyed the property, I showed the decking as it is currently at the same place it is today, and you know, of course, nobody likes to assume, but I assumed it was grandfathered in because there's old piles underneath this structure that still exist with extreme low tide. So removing the spot where they're talking about, you still couldn't get a boat in there unless you go in there and tear up the whole bottom and take out piles that have been there over 100 years. So I was under the assumption that it was grandfathered in, being a existing pier, even though there was several years where it was nothing but piles. So that's why.
Did you know it was in violation?
No, sir, I did not. I wouldn't have purchased the property for... I had the chance between this one and the one next door. The one next door didn't have any dock on it, and I said, I'll never be able to get anything passed like that, and if you've got it in, I want to buy it.
I wish you hadn't.
Any other questions?
I have one question.
Yes, sir. Mr. Tyson.
So you do not live there at this present time?
No, I've got a house about 20 miles inland, but I do plan on building there within the next few years as the economy gets a little bit better.
Okay.
Anything else? Anything else you want to say?
I think I'm done.
Okay. Anyone here in opposition? Anyone here in support? All right. You swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
Thank you. Please state your name.
My name is Roger Habeck, and I deal with broken real estate. I originally brought the property to Mr. Halder's attention when it became available, since I knew the former owner. And I had no thoughts one way or the other about the dock. I had seen it and just thought the property was a good value, and he did too, and he purchased it. When the problem came up about the property, he called me, as we're acquaintances, and I'd been working well on another project, the sustainability park, which you heard earlier this morning. So we went back and forth and met with Juliet, and we had a struggle even trying to figure out what was going on, because here we are 10 years after the fact, that after this thing was built, now we're dealing with whether it's legal or not. And I think, you know, just from a common sense and general reasonableness standpoint, I think 10 years is an adequate amount of time for you guys to do your job. And now he's got to catch it in the shorts because of it. The other thing is, I've looked at that property and looked at that dock. That's a heck of a construction. That's just not something that you're going to tear a couple of boards off and say, okay, now it's in compliance. It's built like a country barn. It's a lot of work. I don't say you shouldn't protect the bottom, and I don't say that there isn't some sort of adjustment appropriate. But this is exactly the kind of problem that needs to be solved with money and not with abusing somebody. Let him pay a fine, get it behind him, and go on. Because it's going to take a fortune to rebuild that dock, no matter what you do. And he didn't do it in the first place. And I know personally that he did not know about it when it was built. I mean, when he bought it. I thought it was part of a good deal.
Any questions? Thank you, sir. Anyone else, for or against? This question may have been asked before I came back in, but Mr. Halder, are you in agreement with the $3,000 civil charge? If? Matters before the commission. Mr. Erskine.
I just had another question, maybe of staff. there was an indication by the applicant that possibly there was a wharf structure or pier pilings prior to this. Have you found that there was any structure prior to that?
No, I did not. I think it's in your book section. Mr. Halder gave me a supplemental site visit. He gave me some documents that were related to the
I know
it was an old survey, in 1920, that just said wharf in that
general area,
but it
didn't show structure
or
size. So that's the only thing
that
I've come across, and
I was
surprised to
find it. Okay,
thank you.
Mr. Erskine, I did want to say I met with Mr. Conner on site at one point during this review, and he described that it had been a site, an old landing. I don't recall any discussion about the old pilings, but he just described it as a old landing
of
some sort. We've been there for a short period of time.
Okay. Thank you.
It is in your book. I'm sorry. It's the last
page.
Right.
Okay. Any other questions or comments?
Yes, I have a question for
Dr. Neal.
If you have him remove that 1,000 square feet, I guess what is the expected benefit to that? How much of an environmental improvement are you expecting to have occur by having that piece of the dock removed?
Right. I'll be granted the environmental benefit is probably the minimal part of it. Granted, if you remove that decking, it does return the area to its natural state in terms of productivity, you know, sunlight, the type of environment that would have been there before it was built. What we're dealing with here is as much a proprietary responsibility of private use of state land and a policy issue of how much a private individual may be entitled to have repair structure over public property. So it's as much the latter two issues as it is the former of the environmental issue.
It's a pleasure of the commission.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Beck.
I would move that we charge Mr. Halder a $2,000 civil fine and set him free.
All right. I assume that means grant him the after-the-fact permit.
Yes, sir.
For the entire structure with a civil penalty of $2,000.
Yes.
Is there a second to that motion? Is there a second to that motion? Is there a second to that motion? Hearing none, that motion fails for lack of a second.
Okay. I have a question. Does counsel have any insight into this? Any advice to the commission?
With respect to what, sir?
Legalities of this situation.
It's certainly within the commission's purview to give him the after-the-fact permit and charge him nothing. I mean, that is a policy decision for y'all to make. You are not required to charge him anything. You're not required to give him the permit. You can order him to rip it up if you so choose. I don't think that's the commission's will, but just to tell you what the range of options are, it runs from making him rip it out if he wants to keep it to giving him the after-the-fact permit and charging him nothing. Does that answer your question, sir?
Yeah, it does. And
you want me to tell you what to do?
No, that does answer my question because you know there's the legal ramifications. I understand staff's concern about this, and we kind of don't want to put a precedence that, you know, this instead of asking permission, just do it and ask forgiveness later. We don't want to set that up in general. But in this case, this is a case where this guy bought this piece of property and fully thought he was in compliance with everything, and I have a problem finding him for that because it wasn't his violation. And so I have a problem putting a civil penalty on someone who didn't do anything.
If I may, and Tony can correct me if I'm wrong, there has been precedent that the commission has waived the civil charge in circumstances where you're not setting a precedent for doing something and asking forgiveness later, as the circumstances here as you're explaining them. This gentleman is not engaged in that kind of behavior in any way whatsoever. He bought the property believing that he was in compliance, and he finds out later he's not. He's come to the commission and said, okay, I want to do the right thing. But he inherited the problem. He didn't create it, is what I'm sensing that you're getting at.
Yeah.
And I don't think that sets a precedent for what you're
concerned
about.
Thank you. So I'll make a motion that we...
Dr. Neal.
Grant the after-the-fact permits to retain his existing structures and do not have any fines associated with this.
I'll second that.
All right. We have a motion made and seconded. Discussion on the motion. Mr. Tankard, you had your hand up earlier.
Yes, I did. You know, in testimony on the applicant, the applicant made himself, he knew, as I think he mentioned, that this was probably a little bit more of a pier than he'd ever get a chance for. And so when he said that, and he also said he would be glad to take the $3,000 fine and be on his way, I think those two things help me think that perhaps the $3,000 fine is a wise thing, because as Tony mentioned, these things do happen, and they have happened before, and there needs to be some consistency. And I think also the public has to know that they can't really game the system for free. And by his own admission, he knew this pier was a little bit more than he'd seen up and down as a surveyor. He's pretty qualified in that statement, I would say, being a surveyor of that region. So that would be my only reason to go with the $3,000 civil penalty. It's congruent with our law. It's the applicant expects it, and we'd, I think, be slicing the watermelon in half on both sides.
Other discussion?
Mr. Commissioner?
Mr. Erskine?
I can appreciate that we should not be requesting the applicant remove something that he was not a part of. And as far as a civil penalty, it does seem a little bit, I guess, overreaching to charge you with something that you had no part of with a civil penalty. However, I guess I come to the point where, and it's maybe 3,000 or 4,000 square feet over state-owned bottomlands, would we be within our jurisdiction to say there'd be encroachment there and he'd pay, you know, for encroaching over state-owned bottomlands? So it wouldn't be a, necessarily a civil penalty, but it would be the encroachment for the entire structure at a dollar per square foot.
I think that would probably be considered arbitrary and capricious, sir, only because there is a civil charge matrix. I think, are you getting ready to get into that, Tony?
Well, I was going to think go the same way you're going here, that, yeah, we deal with the violations to the civil charge matrix that Paul was referring to, and there's a copy of it in your book, in terms of noncompliance and in terms of deviation from any permits or the requirements for permits and the environmental impact. And that's where the figure came from, mm-hmm. of the $3,000. With regard to coming up with a charge based on the encroachment relative to a royalty, which I think is mm-hmm. what you're getting at, we traditionally, the commission has never charged a royalty for a private facility here. And we oftentimes issue permits that are larger than the 250 or 400 square foot minimum or maximum described in code because there's a need for it depending on the nature of the project. But we still don't charge royalties for those since it's a private use associated with the riparian property. So Paul's point that it would be a little bit deviation from what we typically do with royalties, I think, is fair.
Okay. Let's see. We have a motion, correct? With no approval, with no civil penalty. Ready to vote? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
I think it was two noes.
Three noes.
Three noes. And everyone else was a yes. 4-3. Motion carries 4-3. Thank you. No. Merry Christmas.